Joining us should be Ryan from our NutriMed team. Ryan, are you there?
Hey, Dr. Bell, I'm here.
Hey, wonderful. So how was your fall so far?
Hey, Dr. Bell, thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, then how's your fall? Our weather here, we're having a lot of Santa Ana weather since the early September, so we've had higher temperatures in the summer. It's weird. The seasons are all messed up. People are under stress, and one of the things is NutriMed helps you tolerate stress, metabolic stress, genetic stress, nutritional and digestive stress. It's surprising how many people aren't even digesting their food properly because of stress, isn't it? So we have
I like that term. I don't think I've heard you use that term before. Digestive stress, which is a great way to think about where the dysfunction comes from, and linking in the fact that when we are under stress or just have anxiety or we're rushed, we cannot and will not properly digest food.
Exactly. One of the examples was I saw a new advertisement for a mouthwash that tries to get rid of the gases from the stomach and the upper small bowel. And their idea is if we get rid of these gases, you don't have bad breath. They used to think it was just kind of periodontal disease, which isn't true. It's due to a thing called SBO, small bowel overgrowth. And it can be due to food allergies. It can be due to loss of the pepsin and stomach acid. And then you end up with a growth of bacteria in the upper small bowel that can produce not only hydrogen, so a hydrogen breath test is positive, but also various, nasty, like hydrogen sulfide gas and nitric oxide, et cetera. So one of the more common things that people really don't understand, if they've got bloating and gas, the very first thing I think is that they've got a deficiency, not an excess, but a deficiency of acid and pepsin in their stomach. Then they may have deficiencies of the digest enzymes to break down their food so it's not rotting in their small bowel. And then they don't take antipathogenics like berberstatin that normalize their gut bacteria or probiotics that normalize the large bowel because the small bowel is supposed to be sterile. There's not supposed to be bacteria growing there. So let's kind of foray into this because there's a vast deficiency of people recognizing that many of their other health problems, including mood disorders, sleepiness, and even insomnia, might be tied to gut stress. And the fact that their gut is not responding properly to digest food correctly, or that they're getting small bowel overgrowth, and maybe their bad breath is because their small bowel is growing bacteria that are producing very nasty gases like a blocked sewer or a septic field that's not working properly. Think of it that way.
Yeah, I think that, a simplified way for people to just think about dysfunction, too, is thinking about, the symptoms, the burping and belching, bloating, and things like that happen within an hour and a half of eating. A lot of times that points you in the direction of working on the stomach acid level right off the bat.
Right.
Because oftentimes we've just been told that you've got to suppress acid for some reason. Nobody ever talks about the benefits of acid. They only, acid sounds horrible, it's used by aliens to eat through spaceships and stuff like that. But the fact is your body critically needs it to break down your food properly. And at the same time, people are so worried about how their immune systems work. What do you think acid is doing? Where do you think you get all this stuff coming into your body from? And it's like, well, your food is going to have lots of stuff. Not everything can be irradiated to be completely bacterialist. And it shouldn't be. That's dumb. That's why they keep releasing studies saying, I don't know why, but if you live on a farm, you generally can have better, you don't have as much allergies or asthma. We're talking, obviously, more organic farming, not big commercial, bombardments of Roundup farming. But the fact is, being in that dirt, being exposed and eating things that, aren't perfectly, homogenized to have zero bacterial content is good. But your stomach acid has to be in there, as you're saying, Dr. Bill, to kill off pathogens, but to also make the food break down into the correct form. And it sets up so that it moves into the small intestine at the proper pH, which is very acidic. It wants to be very acidic. And if it is not, you brought up the term small intestinal bowel overgrowth, which is being cited in the medical literature at a rampant pace because they're realizing, geez, all these people that have all kinds of crazy immune system reactions and inflammatory disorders. Hey, you know what these people have in common? Small intestinal bowel overgrowth. Well, that's because we've either been suppressing it through, as you say, stress, like our acid levels, or the purpose of you doing it to reduce symptoms so we can eat chicken wings and barbecue or whatever it is, pizza or whatever it may be. And so you're taking an acid suppressor because you think it makes you feel good.
Now, I'm going to make a bold statement here. that virtually everybody with an autoimmune disease, from scleroderma to rheumatoid arthritis, has got SBO and dysbiosis. Everybody. Which means they got abnormal stomach acid and pepsin, they've got abnormal. And if you don't present the stomach contents to the upper small bowel at the proper pH, when the succus entericus, and that's the Latin term for the fluid that comes out of your pancreas, the digestive enzymes, those digestive enzymes, when they mix with the fluid contents of your gut, if they're not acid, they're not in what's called a pKa, or maximum optimal enzymatic pH, for the enzymes to actually even break down your food. So if your stomach is basically not acid, your enzymes don't even work, even if you have the enzymes.
Right.
So
right.
People don't get that. And they also don't realize that maybe my joints are on fire and I got a flare-up of my rheumatoid or MS is because I got SBO, and I've got a gut dysbiosis, and I'm growing fungi, mycobacteria, parasites, organisms break down my gut wall, like Helicobacter pylori, which, by the way, is endemic in China and Asia. And one of the reasons why they don't have so much massive illness is they have lots of spices that help to counteract the dysbiosis in their gut. But I don't know a person who has had autoimmune disease of any kind who hasn't got a small bowel overgrowth and dysbiosis. It's a universal law. If your gut's screwed up, the rest of it is going to be screwed up too.
Yeah. This is where formulations like Digestes, you can just bring it in. You can work on the acid levels. You can help break down the food. And that may be the solution for most people. That's all they need. Others, if the symptoms are occurring a couple hours after they eat, that may point to the direction they're more enzyme-based issues.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that Digestes wouldn't be a good place to start. But then bringing in something like the Gastrozyme, that's 100% vegetarian, very powerful enzyme formula, would be great. The other thing that is critical is looking at Living Probiotic and Living Probiotic Ultra. Those are two different formulas. One is kind of on the lower end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and our Living Probiotic, by the way, is the most popular, powerful strain called the Roselle 6 strain from the Pasteur Institute in Paris. And then our Living Probiotic Ultra, there's nothing on the planet that's as powerful. I mean, you can try to get bifidobacteria and other ones from Greece and so on. Nothing is as powerful as our Howeriu strain. And it's so powerful, you only need one capsule every second or third day, even if you have a serious problem. What I tell people is you have to understand, if your gut's leaky, large molecules are going through what's called a splanchnic circulation through your leaky gut wall, because the tight junctions between the cells are lost. And that means those large allergenic molecules are stimulating the pear patches in your gut wall and the Kupffer cells in your liver, and they're producing cytokines that can crash in your brain or your other tissues, and they increase the chances of autoimmunity, and even enough stress, they can induce cancer. So when people say, well, how did these things happen? Like, for example, ulcerative colitis, there is a 10 amino acid sequence of the fungus that actually is used for making bread, Saccharomyces cerevisiae, that's identical to the basement membrane of your gut wall. 10 amino acids, absolutely identical. It's a thing called immune homology. And it turns out everybody that has autoimmune disease has some degree of dysbiosis in their bowel screwed up. Now, how can you test it? You can do a QRMA test if you either have a machine or purchase one, or go to one of our testing sites. Or you can actually go to directlabs.com and go to Genova Labs and order a CDSA2 stool test. Send the stool back to Atlanta, Georgia, to Genova, and they'll tell you in about a week. And you just send me the report or the PDF of the report, and I can tell you precisely why your bowel screwed up. So if you're trying to control your rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma, multiple sclerosis, and so on, one of the things you should be aware of is that your regular doctor's not trained in functional medicine, so they're completely useless. Useless is the word. They totally do not understand this. That if you've got abnormal cytokines, if you've got abnormal peptides in your gut wall and your major immune system, which is 2/3 to 3/4 of your immune system is in your pear patches of your gut wall and your Kupffer cells in your liver, that's a lot. And if it's screwed up and you have a child with ADD, or have a person with flare-ups of, say, psoriasis or flare-up, which is a paraimmune disorder, autoimmune disorder, or flare-ups in their MS, they're always tied to the fact their gut's screwed up. Interesting, hey?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm giving you connections here, people, that your doctor doesn't even have the faintest idea. And I've measured the cytokine levels and anti-tissue antibodies, and when you clean up somebody's gut, and they don't have SBO, they don't have normal pH, which is acid getting into their upper small bowel, that's when your minerals are absorbed, because if you don't reach what's called a pKa of the minerals, that 10 centimeters of small bowel in the small little section of the duodenum just below your stomach, that's where all your minerals are absorbed. They're not absorbed anywhere else in your gut. Well, it's an active process. So your zinc and copper and all the other minerals are absorbed in that part of your small bowel. If they're not actually actively transported, they don't get in. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, so, and you know, people go, well, I can take my proton pump inhibitors, not. I can, my doctor is smart. He knows what he's doing, giving me an H2 blocker, not. He hasn't looked at my CDSA2. I didn't even know there was a test like that. Oh, my God. I mean, you know, I can train doctors, but I'm telling you, the average doctor, and I don't care whether you're a primary doctor, an internist, or a specialist, would need, in my school, medical school, would need an additional 3 to 5 years training and have to apprentice under a general provider of healthcare before they ever specialize and become a super technician. It's disgusting how ignorant they are. Disgusting. There's no way around it. I mean, people say, you are offending my doctor. I say, I wish I could offend him and then make him smarter, because if I spend 2 hours with any doctor, any specialty, I can make him smarter. I don't care if they're an eye surgeon or an internist or a pediatrician or an MS specialist in motor disorders. I really don't care. If I apply logic and evidence in functional medicine, I can make them a better doctor. It doesn't mean they have to stop being a neurologist or stop being a gastroenterologist or an oncologist dealing with cancer, but it gives them a lot more tools to know what the hell is going on as to why it happened in the first place. So that's a big deal, isn't it? We haven't talked about this before, but I really want to specialize on why do things happen. For example, dementia. Did you know that diabetes of the brain is type 3 diabetes? When your astrocytes stop working, and most people don't realize that the primary action of insulin is not to glute for a transporter to bring sugar in your body, it's to pump sodium out of your cells. So if you're actually able to do a Linus Pauling scan, like his field ion scanner, which I learned how to build one 5 years ago, and I presented to a radiologist in L.A., and we have a sort of a way of doing that now with our Metapathia Hunter, is a field ion resonant scan. But I know how to make a radiological scanning machine. It would look like an MRI scan. You could look for specific biomolecules and ions and everything. What you'd find is that the tissues of every cell in the body have excess sodium in them, and you're not pumping out the sodium and bringing in magnesium and potassium. That's what's going on. Now, when that happens, you not only can't metabolize sugar anymore in the brain cells, which run on sugar, it's the high-octane fuel of your brain. You run on medium-chain triglycerides. So if you're not drinking coconut milk or other MCTs, your brain cells can't make an action potential, so you become demented. Now, how many doctors out there know that if you've got someone who's starting to lose their marbles, one of the first things you do, even besides Cognition Plus and Brain Power, and things to stop free radicals like Gamma A Plus and Omega Cod Liver Liquid and Omega Supreme Krill, is give them coconut milk. How many people know that? Not many.
Right.
Not many. So if Granny had coconut milk and took her nutraceuticals to resurrect her brain, so she actually has a GLUT4 transporter, and now her brain cells are no longer acting like they're diabetic. So if her brain cells act like they're non-diabetic because she can actually transport sugar and metabolize it, she can create an action potential and she can actually think. It's so radical, isn't it? You know?
Yep.
Now, of course, mineral content is really important. It has to cross the blood-brain barrier, which is why we have protein, amino acid, chelates. We're working on some other technologies, too, for minerals. But, you know, if you're diabetic or if you Alzheimer's, how many people are told if their mama or themselves or their daddy is turning, you know, demented, that they are basically a diabetic of the brain? Now, you can have normal blood sugar, even just slightly elevated hemoglobin A1C, but your brain cells are starving because insulin resistance has gotten severe enough that you're getting patchy dysmyelination, losing the myelin sheath, and large areas of your brain, the cortex, can create an action potential. And you can prove it by doing a quantitative electroencephalogram, a SPECT blood flow scan, and a positron emission tomography with fluorodeoxylabeled positronic glucose. People say, no, Dr. Deagle, you can't prove that. I said, you're talking to Deagle. I damn well can prove it. And when I work with neuroscientists, they say, wow, this is cool. You understand it. Of course, they're usually Lexicorp certified quantitative electroencephalographers, which, by the way, the neurologists aren't. They don't do a quantitative EEG. They do regular EEGs. You can do deep brain studies with proper imaging studies and organic acid analysis and organic metabolites through Great Plains Labs and others. And I can prove to you that as we start to correct their brain chemistry, they have a non-diabetic brain. So whether you have a stealth virus growing in there too, which happens 28% of the time, according to Cornell University published 6 years ago, everybody who's demented has basically got a diabetic brain. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. That is
now,
cool.
You're not going to hear this from your doctor because they're going to tell you stupid stuff. Same way as everybody that's got MS has a spirochete-induced myelopathy, which means whether it's Lyme disease, babesiosis, or ehrlichiosis, there are sequences on the Lyme parasite that are identical to the oligodendrocyte myelin sheath. So when your immune cells migrate across your ventricles into your periventricular, anterior and posterior limb of the internal capsule and start destroying your myelin sheath, so you're down under four layers so you can't get an saltatory nerve conduction, it's no wonder you can't feel your seat when you sit down, and it's no wonder you can't control your feet because you don't have saltatory nerve conduction to your motor endpoint anymore. Dr. Deagle knows how to remyelinate using things like Omega Supreme Krill, and Sphingolin, which is myelin basic protein, turning off the peroxynitrate with gamma A+, cell detox, glutathione, and neutrotriala, and stimulating regeneration of the brain cells, including with use of peptides and other things. So when people say, you can't, that's not true. And again, we're not perfect yet. We're becoming more perfect. How's that? We're learning how to combine technologies and even some drugs. There's times for drugs, for example, this latest thing called, acute flaccid myelitis, which is a syndrome from various viruses can do this, including enterovirus D65. I know how to turn it off, but I may recommend that you see a pediatric immunologist to use things like cyclosporine and other things to turn off the immune system, and nutraceuticals like PowerC Plus, Cell Detox, Glutathione, Cell Defense Plus, etc., so you can turn off the AFM and the child doesn't get paralyzed permanently or end up in a ventilator. And then you taper off the drugs as quickly as you can, because a lot of these drugs are incredibly dangerous if you move them on long term. So, you know, when people say you can't do this, you can't do that, it's like, okay, I'll give you benchmarks. Measure the anticholinergic receptor antibody, which is why you get an ascending Guillain-Barré paralysis with this AFM syndrome. And it's getting real frequent. We had 50 cases in 24 states just in the first 9 months of the year. So something's going on to increase the frequency of the syndrome, and certain viruses are much more deadly to cause it. So what do you think of that, Ryan? That's a different approach, isn't it? Combining the best of science and medicine, and maybe even using some drugs that are used for basically immunologically paralyzing your immune system, but then getting off the damn things as quickly as possible because they're dangerous. You know, like, I got to believe, I watch these commercials on TV about people take this drug, and they have weird things like Reltaz and other things like, these names sound like they're made by Klingons. I call it Klingon Pharmaceutical Company. Did they employ Klingons to make names? It's like that, you know.